The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones that we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, January 13th, 1946, we present the ninth in the distinguished new NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today,
the struggle for individual betterment through world brotherhood.
Mankind's age-old hope for progress through world peace. The Organization of the United Nations.
This is Merrill Miller in London, ready to bring you Mrs. Franklin Delano Roosevelt from the United Nations Organization Conference with the first report by the United States woman delegate. We are standing by.
Your move, Seth.
Yes, I know it, and I'm a-moving. Now watch this. There, there, and there. By Tophet, I almost wipe you off the map that time.
The National Hour microphone in Washington. We are anxious to hear this very important message from Mrs. Roosevelt at the United Nations Conference in London. We are waiting, too, to make our own contribution. So this is Robert McCormick reporting. We are ready.
What's that you got on the radio?
Oh, just a lot of talk, I calculate. Well, you slaughtered me that time, Seth.
I figure I can do it again, too. Oh, Tom. You, Tom Glazer.
Oh, guess I was about to nod off there.
Throw a few chunks in the stove. She's a-freezing up outside.
All right.
And here in New York, this is Robert St. John, ready to call in Washington, London, and NBC's news and research staff as we present this stirring documentary on the background and meaning of one of the world's most important meetings. A meeting which began in London only this past Thursday in an old church hall next door to historic Westminster Abbey. At this meeting may be decided, now and for the future, the question of whether mankind is to grow and prosper or whether mankind is to continue to fight and to die.
I got the men set up on the board, Seth.
Well, it's my time to play the Reds, I hope you'll recollect.
I can't let it do. Stop hollering before you hurt.
Well, first off, I aim to stop this thunderation radio from hollering. People get up and jabber.
That's good, Seth. Well, I guess I'll get in a little practice on this here guitar.
Oh, you and your folk songs, Tom. Always plunking and singing.
Yeah, Red gets the first move, Seth.
Well, I'll move in my own time, Jeff. Can't see why you're in such an all-fired hurry to get slaughtered again.
I heard you turn off your radio, gentlemen, but our program happens to be about a subject that you can't duck just by turning off your radio. Are you sure that you wanted to turn off your radio?
Too much jabber. Man can't hear himself think.
A nice setup you have here. Village store, red-bellied stove, cheese and crackers at your side, and checkers on the board. Very nice.
It'll do, young fella. Seth?
Passing fair. You see, young fella, store's closed on Sunday. And Jeff and me and Tom and his guitar, we like to get away from the women folks for a little while.
Hey, Seth. Listen, young fella, how'd you get in here?
By Tophet, yes. There's such a thing as trespassing, you know, young fella.
Well, I came in because I thought it was just possible that you'd like to know something about the United Nations organization after all.
I know a song about United Nations.
Shut up, Tom, shut up. Sounds like either a preacher or a politician, I said.
Yes, calculate you're right. Listen, young fella. Me and Jeff here, we went to preaching this morning. And come Tuesday, we vote for town marshal. Nice to have met you. Your move, Jeff.
I came here neither to politic nor to pray. I can be brief, too. I can sum up the entire history of man's effort to live at peace with his fellow men in just three words.
Three words? Well, now, that's more like it. Let's have them. Before you leave, that is.
This song has a three-word title, United Nations...
Oh, shut up, Tom.
Here are the three words, Adam to Atom.
Adam to Atom. Don't rightly know what you mean, young feller, but... Well, them three words you just said made a little prickle run up the spine.
They cover a lot. From Adam, the first man, and he tried to get along, right up to Hiroshima. The atom bomb at Hiroshima, that made it necessary for us to get along together as a world or to face destruction.
Yes. Adam to Atom. Yeah, put away the checkers, Jeff.
Oh, all right.
Now, as you were saying, young feller, and mind you, no preaching.
No preaching. I thought you'd be interested. You always have been, because two or more men around a pot-bellied stove or a cracker barrel, that's American democracy. It's the American democracy that's brought us this far along the world's road.
This song I was...
Oh, Tom, Tom. Now then, young feller.
Yes?
I calculate no fine flowery speeches, neither. You can save them for your soap operas. Now, about this Adam to Atom.
All right, no speeches. The story of the effort to achieve world peace is as old as the world itself. But let's look only at the recent past. Let's go back to August 14th, 1941. Let's look in on an historic meeting which was held in the waters of Placentia Bay, Newfoundland. There on a battleship, we find...
The officer of the deck will detail designated side boys and honor guard to the gangplank.
There's unusual activity on the ships below us in Placentia Bay. Now, one of these ships is Britain's newest and mightiest battle wagon, HMS Prince of Wales. And what a ship. You know, just recently she helped to send Hitler's big Bismarck to the bottom. There are a lot of destroyers, of course, scuttling about like water bugs. And as you know, Hitler probably would give his left arm to be able to get some of his subs into the ships that are gathered for this meeting. Now, another ship down there is a heavy cruiser, the USS Augusta. There seems to be some kind of ceremony underway on the Augusta's quarterdeck, so let's tune it in.
Morning, Admiral.
Good morning, Mr. Churchill.
Not too early, am I?
No, indeed. He's on his way here now. He doesn't get around easily, you know, although we put in these ramps for his wheelchair.
We're not very formal with each other, you know. I wouldn't want to wake him up just for a farewell call. He worked rather late last night.
I know. It was my privilege, sir, to read a draft of the document you completed.
Eh? What'd you think of it?
Remarkable. A blueprint for free peoples of all the world. A promise of self-determination for peoples everywhere.
Yes, as soon as the dictators are beaten.
But a document so important, so historic, it should have a name.
Well, we finally decided on that last night.
And?
We decided to call it the Atlantic Charter.
Gangway! Gangway!
Gangway! Clear the quarterdeck!
Just look at him. Good morning. Good morning, Franklin.
The date of that Atlantic Charter meeting, August 14th, 1941, is important because just 4 years later, to the exact day, World War II came to an end with the official capitulation of Japan.
City desk, will you, June?
Hey, I did get that wording, Charlie. Did you?
Yeah, I got it.
Hello, hello, hello. Desk, give me a fast rerun.
I'm going to grab a cab. Not so
good. In good shape today, what?
Yeah. Farrell at the White House, Chuck. Get ready to take a hot lead.
Hold it a minute.
Those staccato voices you hear, that sounds very much like the breakup of a big White House press conference. Like the press conference, for instance, on New Year's Day, 1942. I wonder if down in Washington, Bob McCormick happens to remember that press conference.
Remember it, Bob. I'll never forget it. Because, you see, I was there. It wasn't a happy New Year's Day. We'd been at war for 3 weeks, and we weren't doing very well. The ruins of Pearl Harbor were proof enough of that. And, well, I think everyone at that conference got a feeling of hope. from that day's news.
All right, you ready, Chuck?
Okay, shoot.
The White House announced today that 22 nations have now signed up in the war against the Axis. It is the greatest military force in history, and the group is to be known as the United Nations. Got it, Chuck?
Right.
Well, young fella, we read all about that in the papers.
Yep, and heard it over the radio, too.
Well, that was the beginning. 22 nations signing up, agreeing to fight together until the war was won. In 1942, there was no time for conferences. We were too busy. But in 1943, there were a number of international meetings.
Casablanca, January 26, 1943.
The United States and England hereby declare at their joint policy that there will be no negotiated peace for the Axis. There must be unconditional surrender.
Hot Springs, Virginia, June 3rd, 1943.
The United Nations hereby states their determination that worldwide freedom from want, the want for food, can be achieved with victory.
Quebec, August 24th, 1943.
The United States and England hereby declare that all the armies, fleets, and air forces of both nations shall be used jointly to achieve the common destiny of victory and freedom.
Moscow, November 1st, 1943.
The United States, England, and Russia hereby announce their determination to continue to work after victory in the interest of world peace.
Well, that's mighty interesting, son. Mighty interesting.
Yes, sir. Pretty hard combination to beat. Yes, sir.
I'd like to sing that.
Oh, Tom, shut up and listen. Go on, young fella.
Well, that meeting in Moscow was especially important for this reason. For the first time, Russia formally agreed to participate in post-war plans for world security. Early in November of 1943, at Atlantic City, New Jersey, there was a meeting of the United Nations Relief Conference, and there UNRWA was formed. And then came the twin meetings of Cairo and Tehran. At Cairo on November 21st, 1943...
I hope you gentlemen will have a pleasant trip to Tehran.
Thank you, Madame Chang. I only wish that you and the Generalissimo could go with us.
Yes, but of course that is impossible. Russia is not at war with Japan, so China cannot attend the meeting at Tehran with the United States and England.
Russia is not at war with Japan yet, but in God's own good time, things may change.
Ah, but we have so much to be thankful for. Here at Cairo, China has become a full partner with your two countries. The Generalissimo and I are very happy at what we all have accomplished here, at the assurances given China by you two gentlemen.
You can count on it, Madam Chang. From now on, the war in the Pacific will go at a much faster pace.
Gentlemen, the pilot reports the plane ready for takeoff.
Goodbye, Mr. Churchill.
Madam, farewell.
And to you, sir, I have a special word. We in China look upon you as China's best friend. We in China pray for you, and every day we bless your name.
Come along. You're holding up the plane.
Mr. Churchill is calling, so I won't keep you. Goodbye, and God bless you, sir. And please take our greetings to your charming wife, to Mrs. Roosevelt.
This is an historic meeting, this meeting here at Tehran on December 1st, 1943. This is the first face-to-face meeting of the Big Three. Here, the groundwork is being laid for a union of nations which will work together after the war is won.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen!
But wait, the talk and laughter here at this dinner party is quieted down. Two figures have arisen. The one at the head of the table is a short, stocky man with a ruddy complexion, dressed in a simple Russian uniform. He has a black mustache and eyes which can pierce, but which can also twinkle. The other figure, the one about to speak, is at the center of the table. That would be Molotov.
Gentlemen, Comrade Joseph Stalin wishes to propose a toast.
To my courageous friend, Winston Churchill, today celebrating his 69th birthday, Mr. Churchill. And to a friend who guided his nation in providing us with the tools and weapons without which we might have been defeated. To my fighting friend, Franklin D. Roosevelt.
This meeting resulted in the historic Tehran Declaration, a document which pledged the Big Three to work and to fight for victory and to preserve this unity after the war was won. The simple words of the final paragraph of this document are well worth remembering.
We came here with hope and determination. We leave here friends in fact, in spirit, and in purpose. Signed, Roosevelt, Stalin, Churchill.
And here in Washington, the Tehran meeting gave a big boost to American war production. And as our production grew, it was matched by the increase in our efforts to become world-minded. There were more conferences, of course. There were compromises. There were many points on which nations did not see eye to eye. But all of these conferences moved us a little closer to the goal of international unity. And on February 4th of 1945, there was the meeting at Yalta, the meeting at which it was decided how to control the Axis nations when they were beaten and how to restore livable conditions in ruined lands. The meeting at Yalta was the second time the Big Three of Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin saw and talked to each other. It was also the last time. For within 2 months of that meeting, Franklin Roosevelt was dead.
Yeah, that was a mighty sad blow. You remember, Jeff?
Yep. Folks around here was powerful broke up when that happened.
Yes, Franklin D. Roosevelt was no more. But he must have been happy at the thought that victory, for which he worked so long and so hard, was at last in sight. And though the man was no more, his ideas resulted in the meeting at Dumbarton Oaks, which was in turn a curtain raiser for the San Francisco conference. At this conference, they established a new world order composed of men and nations of goodwill. At this moment, we're in the press gallery at the conference in the Veterans Building in San Francisco. Two reporters at their desks are unaware that they are about to see history in the making.
Well, looks like all the fireworks are over at the conference, huh, Madigan?
Haven't had a good story from the floor for 2 days.
I certainly could use a headline.
So could I. Give him a gin, Rummy?
Okay. Hey, wait a minute. Who's that down there on the floor?
Mr. Chairman!
Let's have a look. Oh, wait a minute.
Chairman,
he's speaking.
I request the privilege of the floor.
The chair recognizes Delegate Padilla of Mexico.
Mr. Chairman, the Republic of Mexico wishes to suggest that certain nations, as at present constituted, be barred from membership in the United Nations Organization. Is that suggestion in order?
Hey, Haney, this sounds hot.
You said it. I better get my paper and the phone.
You have the floor, Delegate Padilla. The chair is willing to listen to any suggestion by the Republic of Mexico.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, gentlemen, the Republic of Mexico feels very strongly that membership in the United Nations Organization should not be granted to any nation sympathetic to the Axis or any government set up with Axis help. Specifically, we in Latin America are against membership in the United Nations for the government of Spain. It is a well-known fact that the present Spanish government was set up with the help of Mussolini and he'd left. Speaking for Mexico, I wish to know if the members of this conference are in favor of admitting the government of Spain.
No. No.
I wish to know explicitly the position of the United States on this question.
The United States government is in complete accord with the sentiments expressed by the Republic of Mexico.
That was one conference action which found ready approval. But when the motion came to give membership to Argentina, then the delegates chose sides. There were arguments, bitter word battles. Of such are conferences made. So that was San Francisco. San Francisco was followed by V.E. Day. V.E. Day was followed by the Potsdam Conference. This time there was a different big three, Truman and Attlee taking the place of Roosevelt and Churchill. And it was while returning from the Potsdam Conference aboard the Augusta that President Truman made one of the most important announcements in world history. It was at 10:45 on the morning of August 6th, 1945, when the world's most closely guarded secret was first given to the world, the story of the atomic bomb. And so, gentlemen, there you are. That's the story of what we've done up to now.
Well, young fella, you told us about a lot of meetings, a lot of conferences. But what does it all add up to? Like the fella says, what's all that got to do with the price of fish?
I'm glad you said that. You used it just as an expression. But what happens at the London conference may very well affect the price of fish, the price of everything, including how much we, as nations and as individuals, we'll have to pay to keep alive. What happens in London may decide whether our world is to benefit from peace and progress, or whether our world is to continue to fight and to die.
Well, it's all right interesting. Calculate, I might do a little thinking about it.
Well, Seth, guess I'll be going. They asked me to bring my guitar down to the church social.
And I'll be going along, too, because we expect to hear soon from Mrs. Roosevelt in London.
Well, now, wait a minute, young fella. Don't be in such a hurry. You've took the trouble to do a lot of explaining to us, and we'd like to do a little entertaining for you. Tom, you've been blabbering about some song you wanted to sing. So now here's your chance. What are you going to sing?
Why, it's called United Nations Hymn. And I've been trying to tell you that it seems to fit right in with what this here feller's been talking about.
Fine, fine. This here's Tom Glazer. Calls himself sort of a folk singer. Now, Tom, you go right ahead and sing your song before Mr. St. John goes.
Okay, Seth, here she is. Feller by the name of Shostakovich wrote it, one of them Russian writers.
The sun and the stars are all ringing with song rising strong from the earth. The hope of humanity singing a hymn to a new world in birth. United Nations on the march with flags unfurled. Together fight for victory, a free new world. Together fight for victory, a free new world.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tom. That was fine. Now the National Hour calls in London, where last Thursday the Assembly of the United Nations Organization began its sessions. Come in, NBC in London.
This is Merrill Muller at the United Nations in London. Behind every organization is the mind and personality and driving spirit of one or more great men, and that of UNO is the late and great President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It is only fitting that his country delegated the President's widow to this effort of world statesmanship, and the National Broadcasting Company has the honor to present Mrs. Franklin D.
I'm very happy to have this opportunity to say a few words to the people at home. I only hope that there, the interest in the building of the United Nations organization is as great as it is here. I've never yet driven to the hall for the plenary session without finding people, many people, waiting outside to see the delegates go in and still waiting when they come out. It doesn't matter whether it rains or whether the rain stops for a short time. They're there. The galleries are almost always filled. And while the delegates are an interesting group, most interesting, perhaps, and striking are those from Arabia. Still, it is in seeing an organization built that these people are really interested. And that's what I hope the people care about at home. Here, we are working again to try and see whether some machinery can be devised which will keep the nations together and make them work together so that peace can come to the world. So far, I think everything is going very smoothly. Feeling on the whole, I think, is very good. I think everybody has a sense that they must succeed. They know the alternative is a chaotic world, and nobody wants to live in that kind of a world. So I think on the whole, that whether they come from one part of the world or another, they are here with the determination that they are going to make a success of it. There are rather few women in the group, and that I think is a pity, because I think that men and women working together must eventually build this organization. They must appeal to the peoples of the world, because that is the way the interest will be kept alive. And it must be the peoples of the world that care enough about peace to make it possible for us have it in the future.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Roosevelt. You have just heard Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt reporting on the United Nations organization, which is now meeting in London.
Our subject has been the United Nations organization, and this is what we learned.
The present world peace movement began with a great man who had a great idea. That man is gone, but he has left the idea to us. This afternoon we have shown how that idea grew to a document, then to an organization. There have been many international conferences since the beginning of World War II. Not one of those conferences has accomplished all that it set out to do, but each one accomplished something, and there is some movement forward and inching along of progress.
On the subject of the United Nations organization, our documentary is closed.
But this is Robert St. John inviting you to tune in again at the same time next Sunday, when our subject will be the mountains of goods produced for the armed services, the goods now described as surplus property.
This has been the National Hour. From our studios in New York and Washington, and by shortwave from London, the National Broadcasting Company has presented the ninth of the new series on current affairs and national problems. Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt spoke from London. Robert St. John was your narrator, with Robert McCormick reporting from Washington. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.